It's playoff time in the NBA and NHL. Baseball's in full swing, and FanDuel is your place to bet on every game. Right now, brand new customers get $150 in bonus bets guaranteed. $150, win or lose. Bet on everything from slap shots to home runs to slam dunks, and all on an app that's safe, secure, and easy to use. I don't know what you're waiting for. Go to FanDuel.com/Hardy. Make your first bet an automatic win with FanDuel, America's number one sportsbook.
21 plus and present in Massachusetts. First online real money wager only. $10 first deposit required. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Hope is here. Gambling helpline ma.org or call 800-327-5050 for 24/7 support. Play it smart from the start. GameSenseMA.com or call 1-800-GAM-1234.
With Pat Celtics and Bates. They'll also talk socks and out-of-town fame. Just call them up on this Saturday. Gasper!
Hey, Murray.
Gasper!
Hey, Murray.
Just call them up on this Saturday. Gasper!
Hey, Murray.
Gasper!
Hey, Murray.
Gasper!
Hey, Murray.
Gasper!
And it's 2-2. Some kind of game one. Out three after the home run by Judge, and Boston hangs on 5-4.
Yeah, hangs on. That's one way to put it. White knuckle. How about that? From the Town Fair Tire Studio, Gasper Murray here on 98.5 The Sports Hub. That, of course, the final call last night's take years off your life. 5-4 Red Sox win over the New York Yankees. Game one, ALDS. I forgot how stressful these games could be, Chris, because I find, you know, look, I've talked about this before, either fill it in for the baseball reporters or on Felger and Mass. A lot of the 162-game schedule of the regular season is just such a slog, and it's so pointless, especially this year as top-heavy as the American League was. But playoff baseball, oh, man, great roller coaster ride, and the twists and turns and how much you hang on every pitch. I forgot how stressful the whole thing could be.
I have to say this, and I don't say this lightly talking to you, Jim. It sounds like playoff baseball is almost like a drug for you.
In a way, and in a lot of ways, it's as close to, so the one thing I'm at my worst at is watching playoff football, but playoff baseball, like, it's right up there. So in my expectations for the Red Sox the last couple of seasons, especially last year against the Astros, I knew they'd get killed in that series, were minimal at best. This year, look, with 108 wins, they are legit with all the questions surrounding the pitching staff, especially with the bullpen, like, you know, they should win their first couple of rounds and get to the World Series. But in that, it's the Yankees. Like, you just forget all the drama that surrounds those two when they've met each other in the postseason, 99, 03, 04. It was just, man, like.
Yeah, you're on a high.
Yeah.
Ride that high, Jim.
How do you go to bed after a game like that? But there's a lot of good, obviously. Chris Sale, first start with your thoughts there. Starts off the game with a 96-mile-an-hour fastball. All the questions about his health. Oh, we're freaking out. What's he going to look like? He looked pretty damn good.
Yeah, and unfortunately, I feel like his performance and his health almost got overshadowed by the shaky bullpen, but I think that has to be the number one, or at least the 1A takeaway from that game, is you have to feel good about Chris Sale, and you feel like you have your ace back. And it was interesting going into that game, because I always felt you'd know by the fifth start what Chris Sale was. The problem was the fifth start was game one of the ALDS. In an ideal world, that fifth start coming back from whatever the shoulder issue is, you know, mild inflammation or whatever's going on there, ideally, that fifth start would have been at the end of the regular season. It's, you know, exactly what you're going to get from Sale. Well, you didn't know that. But now you do after game one. I think it's a big start, sets the tone for that rotation. Obviously, those guys have not pitched well the last couple of years in the playoffs, haven't had a lot of luck. And I think that gives confidence to the whole team. You know, it's really simplistic, and we say it all the time in football, but for you to win at this level in the playoffs as a team, you need your best players to be your best players. And that's what it was last night for the Red Sox, whether it was Sale, J.D. Martinez, Craig Kimbrel, I'll throw Mookie Betts in there too with the double and a great catch. That's what the Red Sox need, and they haven't had that the last two off seasons. Their best players haven't been, or postseasons, I should say. Their best players haven't performed like their best players. They're off to a pretty good start last night.
Yeah, and even some of the unsung heroes, like Sandy Leone. You know, he's getting a lot of love from the broadcast. Ron Darling last night, and it's little things like that. How many balls he didn't let get past
him. Those were huge.
Huge. And another little tiny thing, too. I don't know if you happen to see this. When Brett Gardner came on first, when he pinch hit for Hicks, Sale takes a quick second look down at Gardner, and after the delivery of the pitch, Leone actually pops up like he's going to throw down to first, and it's little things like that. Like, you know, if you're paying attention to it, it's like, okay, these are the little things that can help him win a game like last night. So it was big for an unsung guy last night, too. But you mentioned J.D. Martinez. Man, I couldn't have been more wrong about that guy, and I'm glad that I am. Like, you know, in the offseason last year when Stanton ends up at the Yankees, I was like, you missed out on the great white whale. That was the guy that would be the factor to change things in this offense that you so desperately needed. J.D. Martinez, who the hell knows about him except for hardcore seamheads that watch occasional Arizona Diamondbacks baseball. Boy, he's a stud. He is. I mean,
yeah,
he's made the world a difference. And
yeah, I mean, I was wrong about him, too.
To pad that, or to give that lead, that early lead, the 3-0 lead for Chris Sale last night, him coming back like that, it was so enormous. And, you know, he's not weighed down by, I think, the enormity of, you know, Yankees, Red Sox.
It gave him a little bit of a margin. Yeah, he suddenly had a little pad. He had a little cushion there, a little bit of a, you know, margin for error. And I think the whole team did. And J.D. Martinez even said it last night in his post-game press conference. He mentioned his hit and how it sort of took the pressure off. And I think that's true. I think J.D. Martinez took the pressure off a lot of guys on that Red Sox team who had not succeeded in the postseason. It's like, okay, all of a sudden we're up. We're playing from ahead. This is good. This is like the same thing we went through in the regular season. We're that 108-win team. And so huge, huge hit for J.D. Martinez and the type of hit that really sort of sets the tone for the Red Sox, not only in game one, but potentially in the series.
All right, that's enough sugary sweetness about last night's game. Yeah. Let's get to when the wheels nearly fell off. Thanks, of course, to the one fatal flaw of your 2018 108-win Boston Red Sox. The bullpen, otherwise known as the Wheel of Gutless Bums. Came up with that in May. We're still using it on October 6th. What the hell? From Barnes, Hembry, Brazzers, they all stink. Even Craig Kimbrell, while he did get three, you know, ballsy outs, it was after the home run he gave up to Aaron Judge in the ninth. It's like, oh, God, what are we doing here? Like, again, this is happening. Oh, my God. And now we get the news today on Stephen Wright, which is, in case people didn't hear it in the update at the top of the hour, Sarge, what's going on with Stephen Wright?
It's a knee injury, and he's out for the remainder of the ALDS against the Yankees.
That's not good.
No, it's not. And remember, Stephen Wright, you know, he had that cartilage regeneration surgery, you know, something similar to what Dustin Pedroia went through. And Wright came back, pitched well, then had to go in the DL. Then he came back in September, and he was a reliever, and he pitched great in 0.66 ERA as a reliever. And I think he was a big part of what they planned to do in the postseason out of that bullpen. And that's a huge loss for Alex Cora, who already is looking in a situation where he has a real dearth of reliable options to bridge it from the starters to Kimbrel. So where do they go now? My number one question is, who ends up on the playoff roster to replace him at this point? Do they make a move there, or do they just say, okay, he can't pitch this series, but if we win, we want to get to the ALCS and we want to make sure he's eligible for that, so we won't replace him at all, which is, you know, that's scary. It's also scary to think that Heath Hembry or somebody would be added to this playoff roster for the Yankees. The one thing I would say is I wouldn't mind, you know, if they think this is going to be a longer-term thing and they're not sure about him for the ALCS and they have to replace him, I wouldn't mind putting Bobby Pointer on there.
That's what I was going to say.
Not because Bobby Pointer's this amazing reliever, but with the Hicks injury and if Gardner has to play and Didi Gregorius is a lefty there, and even if Hicks comes back, you might want to turn him around in Yankee Stadium. Like, I would like to see them have that. If Cora has to mix and match and paint and piece everything together, then having a matchup situational lefty might help him. And right now, that's not on the playoff roster.
Well, either way, that bullpen, man, it's a dangerous way to live. And thinking you can win 10 more games with this collection of hacks that are in there, it's, I know this, in watching a game like last night, I don't know if I can handle the stress of it. I barely slept last night. That's when you need old your old friend Booze to help you
Or Ambien.
That'd be, oh, no. I've never taken that, and I have no interest in ever doing so. And a lot of it has to do with, how crazy it's made people. You remember the whole thing with Fred Toucher here maybe about a year and a half ago? Like, I would never touch that stuff. You turn in, you sleepwalk, you eat at night. Like, there's all kinds of bad side effects with that.
Yeah, not much has changed with him.
Just have bourbon. Pat in Boston, you're up here on Gaspar Murray. What did you think about last night in the bullpen?
Hey, what's up, Jim?
Hi.
So, quick question before I get to my point. So, if they do bring Henry to the roster, will Wright be able to come back in the ALCS, or Henry has to stay?
My understanding of it, and I'll double check it, but my understanding of it is if you replace the guy, that he's not eligible for the next round.
Okay, cool. So anyways, I love Jared. Wish I was able to meet them at the bar today. But I disagree with him on his take about the bullpen, saying that they were okay in the first half. I feel like they sucked all year. And I don't know, it's just frustrating. And I was yelling at my TV last night, like, screw Dombrowski. Like, he should have done something.
Yeah.
I don't know, it's just frustrating.
It is, Pat. Yeah, and I'm with you on that. I said earlier, and this was someone that tweeted it to me last night, like, every time, it's up to Alex Cora to push the right buttons and put the best possible reliever in at the best possible time that they're going to be the most effective. But he's been dealt a bad hand. A tweeter, shot at me last night that anytime the Cora makes a change, he should look up at Dombrowski in the box and flip him the middle finger. Like, this is what I got to work with. I have to go to Rick Porcello, who was supposed to be my game three starter in this game. Like that last night too. When I first saw him warming up, I'm like, what's happening? It's come to this early in game one. Granted, it's all good. They won the game, but man, like I said, dangerous way to live right now for this team. The bullpen rearing its ugly head last night in that 5-4 win. So you get David Price on the mound for game two tonight, Chris. What are your expectations there?
Well, I would hope he could pitch as well as he pitched that game back in August that I was at, that happened to be the longest game of the year, 4 hours and 39 minutes against the Yankees, where he really deserved better. You know, pitched six innings. Of course, should not have brought him back up for the seventh. But if he can pitch like that, and that would be great. And I think he's capable of it. He's pitched well at Fenway in the second half here. And I think he has pitched well against quality teams at Fenway in the second half of the season here.
Sure.
So I think he could give you six innings, one run, two runs allowed, and that should be good enough.
Well, he is winless as a postseason starter. David Price hoping for a turnaround tonight, game two against the New York Yankees. He spoke yesterday, and I thought it was a different tone from David Price when he was asked about the lack of success in the postseason. So we're going to play you some of that sound. We come back. You want to talk about last night's game, though? Let's hear from you. It's 617-779-0985. It is Gaspar and Murray on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Gaspar and Murray. 98.5 The Sports Hub.
After you had the circulation issue early in the year, how did you guys keep it in check? And is there any worry that, cold weather, it could crop up again?
No, I don't think so. Go out there and pitch, don't worry about that. Don't think about it. I'll be all right.
Gaspar Murray, 98.5 Sports Hub. Tonight's Game 2 starter, the dainty one, Davey Tinglefingers, David Price. I mean, what are we going to get out of this guy tonight? He met with the press yesterday. That was Evan Drellick, NBC Sports Boston, asking him, hey, you've had issues with numbness in that pitching hand before. It's going to be kind of a coolish fall night. Beautiful night for baseball, playoff baseball tonight at Fenway Park in the 50s. Any reason to worry? David Price says no, everything's going to be fine. And I was actually encouraged by this, and obviously I've been very hard on David Price, what with the stupid impersonation you've no doubt heard on Felger and Maz, and maybe even here. His tone yesterday, I thought, was encouraging in that anytime that David Price in the past, Chris, has been asked about his postseason failures time and again, he gets real defensive, bitchy. That's one of the things that's one of the calling cards of David Price, one of the reasons I've been hard on him. Yesterday, he not only owned it, he just kind of felt like it sounded like maybe less of a burden, like he's accepted, hey, it is what it is. And I thought this was interesting, the way he talked about, he wouldn't look, if he took losses throughout the postseason, whatever, sucks. But ultimately, it's about the team success. That's the more important thing.
If I lose the entire playoffs and we win a World Series, I'll take that. That's what I'm here for. I want to. I don't want this to be about me and me not winning. I want to go out there tomorrow and throw the ball well and help the Red Sox win. You know, whether we're up 1-0 or down 1-0 or whatever it is, I want the Red Sox to win tomorrow. That's what I worry about.
So in the past, again, it's been more like defensive bitchy, talking about, like, you know, he'd reference, well, you know, I have had success, you know, coming out of the bullpen or whatever.
Two wins.
But for him to say that, like, I don't know. I was oddly encouraged by it because it feels like he's owning it now. And on the Baseball Reporters last night, Maz was like, no, that's loser talk right there, saying you'd take the L's. But, I mean, it is about the team success. Sure, you want individual success, and baseball inherently a selfish sport. But,
oh yeah,
I don't know. I found that encouraging that he said that yesterday.
So I think the tone to it was good. But I feel like isn't it very similar to what he told Trenti Kuznarek a couple of years ago? I think the first time when they went in against Cleveland,
yeah,
you know,
goggles on and he was being rude.
You know, that it's not about me. You know, I we can win the world. You know, I don't care if I win a single game if we win the World Series. The reality is part of that is I think David, you know, I think he's gotten a lot better at playing to the audience and realizing, like, I'm not going to win with these people. And I think that's smart on his part because he's a smart guy. But if we all just dissect it, right, intellectually, what he's saying is not really possible. Like, in order for the Red Sox win the World Series, he has to pitch well and probably win a game or two, right? So it's easy for him to say that, and I think he says it because he knows, okay, no matter what I say, I can't win with these people. So he puts that out there, and it's the right thing to say. But if we all just step back from it for a second, can we all just acknowledge that intellectually it doesn't add up?
Oh, yeah, no, from a mathematical standpoint, it doesn't make any sense.
Like, they need him to pitch well.
So I guess it's just a tone thing, because, again, he didn't sound bitchy about it.
No, not at all. And I think he's gotten better throughout that. You know, I think he's just sort of realized how to handle the market. And I feel it's a lot like Josh Beckett, speaking of guys who delivered in the playoffs, right? Josh Beckett delivered in the playoffs. But Beckett, I think, came here and was like, you know what? I'm just going to tell these people exactly what they want to hear, whether I believe it or not, because it's just easier and it cuts the stuff off. And if I try and swim upstream and fight against it, then it's not going to work and it just makes the issues worse. You know, I'm just going to get in and out of this stuff and just get on with what I need to do.
But the expectations, again, for him tonight, like, I look, based on that bullpen last night where the Yankees hit .313 against them, home run, three walks, but again, 0-for-3 with the bases loaded, and you and I tend to agree with you. That has more about to do with the tightness of the Yankees
Stan
and a guy like
Gleyber Torres,
you know, bases loaded. Like, what are you doing, buddy? But okay, they get out of it. But the pressure is on Price, considering how bad that bullpen was last night. To me, if he doesn't go 7, they got issues.
Yeah, so, I mean, 7 in today's, in this day and age in the postseason.
6 1/3?
Especially when it's Red Sox, Yankees, and they're going to run up the pitch counts, and you know what they're going to do. They're going to see a bunch of pitches. I think if he can go out there and give you 6, you know, you need 6 at least from him. And then you know, he gives you 6, then you go to the bullpen, you're going to the bullpen for 9 outs, which I don't think is unreasonable. And you should have somebody behind him, right? Like, I would think Eduardo Rodriguez is ready to roll. So if Erod came in, let's say Erod came in and gave you 2 innings, and then you turn it over to Kimbrel for 3 outs, you're okay.
617-779-0985. Want to hear from you on last night's game. Again, felt like it took a couple of years off my life, especially between innings 7 and 9. Any other like leftover thoughts that you have, Chris, about this game? Even in terms of the Yankees, I thought that you saw some of their, and one of the reasons I kind of wanted this matchup, not just because of the theater of it all, but I think that there's an inherent stupidity in that team that comes from the manager on down. And I thought you saw that early in that it felt like a premature pull of Jay Happ, you know, like, okay, he gives up the 3-run bomb, which could have even, you know, was inches away from being a big single to JD Martinez. But beyond that, he then retires the next 5 batters, gets into a little bit of trouble, and bang, he's pulled early. And I get the strength of that pitching staff is their bullpen, but just felt premature there. And then there was the confusion in the third before Happ got pulled on the bunt that Benintendi laid down. And it's like, that's one of the reasons I kind of was licking my chops at this. Like, the Yankees are just a sloppy, stupid ball club.
Yeah, defensively, they're not a very disciplined, fundamentally sound club. And we saw that, you know, before I go back to the sweep the Red Sox had at Fenway, and you saw that, you know, Andujar throwing that ball away, which sent the game that Price has started, you know, into extra innings and all that stuff. Yeah, I think you look at that, that's an advantage Red Sox. You can tell they want to put the pressure on the Yankees. What was the number? I think they had stolen like 17 of 18 bases against the Yankees this year going into the series. Benintendi stole a base last night. I think they do want to put pressure on them to defend in some ways. You know, the biggest takeaway, obviously, is the bullpen, but it's just, to me, the pressure that's on Alex Cora. Like, I was looking at Alex Cora, and he was trying to look cool, but it was like, this is a definite Maalocs moment. Like, you could tell he was swallowing it. Like, you know, and I think it's going to be like that the whole way in terms of just the rampant second guessing of him. And he's been opened up to that by the lack of options he really has. And it will be interesting to see how it all gets pieced together. And I wonder, overall, you look at them winning game one, it was so crucial to them. But is it a situation in terms of the way that went, this struggle to hold on to the 5-0 lead and having to go to Porcello there, do you end up winning the game and sort of losing the war?
And it really was instant, too. I tweeted at the time, like, well, here comes the roller coaster ride, but hoping, okay, let's see what Brazzers looks like. Comes in, gives up a hit immediately. It's here we go.
He had the Schiraldi eyes. I even said it. I was like, oh, no.
Oh, yeah.
Because he has Schiraldi eyes. I'm like, this is not good. He definitely had the Schiraldi eyes. He did.
Paulo in Somerville, you're next up here on Gaspar Murray. Hello, Paulo.
What's going on, guys?
Hey, what's up?
Hey, yeah, so I just want to say, like, I thought they pulled Sale a little early yesterday, and as soon as he was going to get the hook ready, I said, oh, no, this game is going to be lost. It's over. And surely enough, it started going down that way. And then when they put Workman in, I thought it was done for sure. And, he, of course, his first 9 pitches, only 1 strike made it over the plate.
All right.
I think for the rest of the series, we need to have Porcello or Rodriguez warming up in the 4th or 5th inning every game because you cannot trust this bullpen at all.
All right, so if it plays out like that, and thank you for the call, Paulo, that now puts more pressure on Nathan Eovaldi, and I guess he gets bumped up, and now he's your Game 3 starter. Is that this is how this is looking, if now that Porcello's going to be coming out of the bullpen?
Yeah, I mean, he had to come out of the bullpen for that. I don't know how often you can do it. And Bob Nightingale of USA Today had something that he tweeted last night that Porcello had thrown a bullpen on Friday prior to the game. Then he warms up in the bullpen. Then he comes in for the 15 pitches. So it would seem to me that it would be pushing it a little bit to bring him back for Game 3. Eovaldi's been really good against the Yankees this year. So that's good. He's been good in that ballpark. So that's good. But, you know, he's still Nathan Eovaldi, which he's fine. I mean, I'd say average major league starter.
I thought he was their best pitcher the last couple of weeks of the regular season.
Yeah, you know, when he first got here, he was really good, right? He was great. And you know, he beat the Yankees at Fenway. I think he had that game where he struck out 10. Then he wasn't so good, and then he sort of picked it up at the end again. So which version of Nathan Eovaldi are you going to get? And sometimes he's really good, but overall, the stuff... For how good his stuff is, he doesn't elicit as many swings and misses as you think he would. But he's been good against the Yankees, and that's why he's the option in this series instead of somebody like Erod. But still, looking at it, like, that's, to me, I'd rather have Rick Porcello, former Cy Young Award winner, and I know he hasn't won a start in the playoffs. I'd rather have him go Game 3. I consider that a win for the Yankees, that they've forced the Red Sox to use Porcello and in all likelihood take him out of that Game 3 start.
All right, we'll continue to take your calls on last night's Sox game and your thoughts on David Price going tonight, what your expectations are for him in Game 2 at 617-779-0985. We've obviously been very Red Sox heavy today. We did the Sports Hub Celtics show at noon. Let's talk a little Pats, Chris. They've already played their Week 5 game, their win over the Colts on Thursday night. Weird game. So we'll talk about that and Sony Michel's performance. Another good performance by Sony Michel. At least I thought so. I can't speak for the guys that I'm working with during the week.
But All garbage time. It was 4 quarters of garbage time, according to those guys.
Well, we'll get to the Pats win over the Colts right after the Hub headlines here with Sarge. It's Gaspar Murray, 98.5 The Sports Hub.
This is Gaspar and Murray on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Shotgun snap to Brady. A give to Michel. Runs to the left side. A first pass to 25. Outside of the 20. 15-10. Left sideline 5. Hurtling into the end zone. Touchdown, Patriots.
There you go, your rook. We talked about him breaking, and he's a breakaway runner. We saw this in Georgia. 34 yards around left end. Sees the goal line. Woo! That's a tough one for the 2-6 show there. Sorry, guys. Great block. But more importantly, his ability to get the daylight. He stiff arms the safety. Lakeshore. Boy, just takes that right hand right into face mask. Get off me. Give me some more daylight.
It was wide open. Offensive line did a great job, you know, executing their assignments. Everybody, receivers. And it was just wide open. Anybody could have ran through that hole. and just had to make one guy miss and just getting him.
Sonny Michel talking about his 34-yard touchdown run in the Patriots' 38-24 win over the Indianapolis Colts, kicking off Week 5 on Thursday Night Football at Gillette Stadium. It is Gasper and Marty, 98.5, a sports hub. So, weird game, Chris. It starts off as crisp can be, especially offensively. Brady, 9-for-9, gets Julian Edelman immediately involved. Boom, 7 on the board. Defense starts to frustrate Andrew Luck early. Pats put up more points. And when it was headed towards blowout territory, it's as if they decided to ramp up the difficulty on themselves just to make it a little bit more interesting. Ball clings off Chris Hogan's hands. Interception. Same for Rob Gronkowski. Interception. Colts go down. They score. And it's like, what the hell is going on here? What? Huh? What? Come on. Then you have the big touchdown grab by Josh Gordon. And then the 34-yard touchdown by Sonny Michel that essentially iced the game in the Patriots' favor. And for all intents and purposes, it's over. But a weird game overall.
Yeah.
And you tend to get those with Thursday nights anyway. I remember last year in Tampa. I remember in 2014, the ugly game against the Jets. They ended up winning by 3 points. I mean, these things tend to happen. But what were some of your leftover thoughts from this one, including Sonny Michel, who has his second consecutive impressive week? At least that's what you and I think.
Yeah, yeah. No, I thought you saw the potential of the offense there when it got a little dicey in the fourth quarter and they needed those scores. You know, Josh Gordon being able to go up and make that catch. And for me, that catch was, you know, look, it's not at the top of Randy Moss's catch catalog, but just the way he made the catch to me was Moss-esque. And I don't say that lightly, having, you know, covered Moss in 07. Just this sort of feeling of, this is a man amongst boys and he's just better than these guys and he's just going to go get it. And that's sort of what happened there. And then Sonny Michel exploding for that run to put things away. I think you see some of the potential of this offense, you know, what they can be if they keep everybody healthy and they all get in sync and they're all on the same page.
Julian Edelman, what did you make of his night? Were you as surprised as I was that he looked as Julian Edelman as he did? I thought that there would be some rust immediately. He's getting separation. They're using him in punt returns, which I didn't really like because of the injury risk. But it looked like he didn't miss a beat, and he hasn't played a football game since the Super Bowl against Atlanta.
I know.
At least a real game.
He looked really good. And to the point that I wasn't really even thinking about the ACL injury. I was more thinking, oh, yeah, he looks really good for a guy who's rusty. He hasn't played the first four games of the year. And I sort of, in the back of my head, forgot, oh, yeah, the ACL. First game back since the ACL. So, no, he looked good. And just some of those little, you know, 4, 5, 6 yard option routes where he just sort of turns in, those routes are so important to this offense. They're the bread and butter of this offense. And with, you know, again, you see the potential of the offense with Edelman back, Gordon doing his thing, and Sonny Michel. They have the potential to be a pretty good offense. And Edelman is a difference maker for them. He's a number one wide receiver. And those bread and butter throws that they need in this offense to not be behind the chains and to keep the sticks moving, he's such a huge part of those.
Well, it's just such a well-oiled machine offensively when he's out there. He really, and whether he's, you know, getting down in zone coverage, finding the holes there, like, again, just the separation too. I remember in that end of 2015 when he hurt his foot, man, their third down numbers like got cut in half because he's just so reliable in who Brady looks for. So it was great, you know, first pass of the game, get him involved.
Yeah,
in
he looked really good. I mean, except for that drop, but
sure,
you know,
there's going to be some rust a little bit. It wasn't all great though. Obviously, Devin McCourty I thought was bad in coverage on 2 touchdown passes.
And a tough day.
Stephon Gilmore looked like he was chasing, and those two things. You know, we're not talking about a lot of weapons in that Colts offense, especially without T.Y. Hilton. They're going to have to get that cleaned up before Kansas City comes in here a week from tomorrow.
Yeah, no question about it. I don't know if those guys just sort of relaxed a little bit or what the deal was there, but the pass defense was not as good as it has been or as good as it needs to be. And moving forward, that's an area that they're going to have to clean up. But when I look at that defense overall, I feel like the secondary should be a strength of it. And they bounce back against Miami. But during the 2-game losing streak, one of the things I was saying is, this is a team that's pretty invested in terms of the amount of money they put in that secondary, whether it's Gilmore, Devin McCourty, Harmon, Chung. That should be the best part of the defense, and it needs to be better. It certainly needs to be better than it was Thursday night.
Does feel like it's setting up, though, for the Patriots in terms of, you know, the best possible time to get the Kansas City Chiefs. They're going to have a tough one tomorrow against a really good Jacksonville Jaguars defense. Granted, it's in Kansas City, but, you know, they get, from the time their game ended to that one, 10 days to prepare for this team. And they got banged up in their Monday night game, did Kansas City against Denver this past week. So it just feels like it is lining up for the Pats to get them at the best possible time.
Yeah, you're right. That's a really good point there. The additional time, I think, to prepare for what Kansas City does. And Andy Reid has come up with some good stuff against the Patriots in the past and some innovative stuff as well. And now he has a quarterback who can push the ball down the field and Mahomes and really sort of challenge defenses vertically. That's not something they always had with Alex Smith. A lot of weapons for Kansas City. I think that extra time is definitely beneficial to the Patriots.
Rocco and Saugus wanted to talk about that upcoming matchup.
What's up, guys? What's up? North Shore in the house, baby. All right, listen. I want to talk about the Kansas City, but yeah, I do agree with you on the offense. I like the offense, but that defense, man. We played five games, and like three out of five, you know, people had career games. Bortles, the kid from the running back from Detroit, and now the tight end from the Colts. It's like, our defense. I want to ask you, Chris.
Yeah.
Do you think the Kansas City is kind of like Baltimore when Baltimore were getting knocked out in the playoffs against the Steelers and the Patriots and they finally, you know, got through and they won that Super Bowl? I mean, Kansas City's been knocking the door for a couple of years now. Yeah. Like you said, they switched the quarterback.
Yeah.
And you know what I mean? Like they could throw it downfield. Do you think like it's like their year, even though with that second defense they have, though?
I mean, it's a little early for me to say it's their year. But I do think that they're more capable than in past years, just with not, you know, the way Mahomes is playing. And we've seen this before. You can have a guy, whether it's a Dak Prescott, you know, who has like a huge seat. That doesn't mean that that's what that guy's going to be his whole career. But right now, for this season, the way Pat Mahomes is playing, I think he's a quarterback that gives the Chiefs a better chance. And I'm an Alex Smith fan, and I have been for a while, but I think a better chance to be able to get past a team like the Patriots, because we saw it last year, right? I mean, you have to be able to make some big plays, some plays down the field, take some chances to beat the Patriots.
Yeah, I mean, the kid looks, more than anything else, it's the poise that I'm most impressed with. And in the Monday night game, I don't know if you watched it, everyone was like pants off about him making that little left-handed throw,
yes,
which was nice. The bigger throw of the night for me was on 3rd and 17. They're down 10 at the time. It's fourth quarter. Kid throws a strike. I think it was Connolly that might have caught her. It was Kelsey. Either way, down the right sideline. Man, he's not rattled. Like,
yeah,
you know, this is a kid that's played, what, 6 starts now, including a garbage one last year in the last game of the season. So he looks like the real deal. And offensively, speed on top of speed at wide receiver.
Oh, yeah.
Travis Kelce, even though I think he's an a-hole, is extremely talented. He's like, you know, the 1B behind Gronk. Their defense, though, it's trash. So much so. So we were talking about this in the post game the other night, Beadle and I. When I was looking it up, I was like, I had to look twice. I know the offensive numbers are up. So when I say the Chiefs' defense is trash, like, I'm underselling it. They're 32 out of 32 teams. They're giving up 451.8 yards per game.
Yeah, they've had major issues.
Holy crap.
Particularly in the secondary, which was an area that they tried to address. Obviously, Marcus Peters is no longer there. They went out and got Kendall Fuller from the Redskins. They've had issues there in that secondary, and they've given up a ton of big plays.
So if nothing else, as of right now, like on paper, take the over on this one a week from tomorrow. That game's going to be a shootout because, you know, I don't trust a lot of the Patriots defense either, especially, again, with all that speed on that Kansas City offense. I mean, I wouldn't be shocked if we're looking at like a 41-40 type of outcome, at least on paper. John in the truck on the Patriots game on Thursday. Hey, John.
Gentlemen, good to talk to you. I haven't talked to you guys in a long time. Wanted to talk to you about the game this past Thursday.
Mm-hmm.
As I'm looking at the game, we have the two interceptions that came off of tips. So if we're looking at this, and I mean, I'm not the whole, I think I'm kind of following the Murray camp where, you know, there are years back where I was always the glasses half full, you know, and Billy Trust and total optimistic, but I kind of have to look at those two tips. We were in the red zone on one of them, and we were really close on the other one, if not in the red zone. And I can't help but think we could be looking at, what, a 44-52-14 game? And how would we be talking about the offense if we were scored 52 points and the defense only gave up 14? Be completely different complexion. I know the guys from 2 to 6 would be talking a lot differently. What are you guys' thoughts on this?
I think it's taken a little far to sort of absolve the defense by saying, well, if the offense doesn't make those turnovers. I mean, the defense was on the field. Their job's to get off the field. However, I completely agree about the offense and where that was at. Indy never stopped them. They stopped themselves with those stupid turnovers. And that, to me, was the big takeaway from that game. You see what the offense is capable of. If everyone can stay healthy and they can get on the same page, you see the potential. And I liked it. You know, I thought it was something that when you looked at it, you go back to that. It's tantalizing to see. So I completely agree on the offense. You know, defensively, I like this defense. I still believe, I keep saying, I think it's going to be better than last year's. You saw it against Miami. I think they just had a little bit of a letdown there, but I'm not going to completely absolve them and say, well, you know, they got put in bad spots by these turnovers. It's like they were shutting down the Colts. They should have done a better job than they did. They let the Colts back in the game there. So
they were terrible, boneheaded plays by Hogan and Gronkowski. And I'll tell you what really bugs me about it, as a card-carrying Brady apologist and Bobo, Chris, much like yourself, he's now two behind what he finished with last year in terms of interceptions. He has six picks already this year, which puts him on pace for like 17. The most he's ever had in one season is 14.
Yeah, that would be a career high.
Oh, God. Oh, I hate that. So that's on them. But he's already sitting at six picks. Like, it's, ugh, man.
Yeah. I mean, do you want to, you know, so my conspiracy theory, and I, you know, I'm just sort of joking around, but let me put my Kyrie Irving hat on here. My conspiracy theory on the Gronk one, initially they ruled that a fumble. And then it's like, wait a second. Brady gets credit for the completion and the yards towards the incentives. Gronk gets credit for the catch and the yards towards the incentives. Oh, this has to be an interception. Let's wipe that all out. Let's wipe for so I was joking in the press box in the game. I'm like, that was changed from a fumble to an interception for salary cap purposes.
Yeah, I could buy into that. We're going to have to answer to Belichick. Okay, we're going to wrap up the show as we normally do. Five questions for Chris Gasper. Got nothing to do with sports. That's next here on Gasper and Murray, 98.5 of Sports Up.
This is Gasper and Murray. You will listen. 98.5 the Sports Hub.
I got five questions for Chris Gasper of the Globe. I got five questions that got nothing to do with sports. I got five questions.
Five. One, two, three, four, five.
I got five questions. I hope this segment ain't too wild.
All right, Chris, question number one. There was a study published recently that revealed the most Googled household fears in every state. They range from being robbed to having ghosts in the house. Boo, boo. In Massachusetts, it was a peeping Tom, believe it or not.
Really?
What is your or your wife's biggest household fear?
Oh, that's a tough one. Biggest household fear. I mean, for me, I can say it's like, you know, the house catching on fire.
That's
like
mine.
Burning down. That's number one for me. Particularly when I'm, like, asleep. Like, I will walk around at night and just, like, unplug things. You know? I'm like, oh, somebody left that plugged in. I'm unplugging this just in case it bursts into flames.
Yeah, I'm real paranoid about burning to death. You know, you wake up and it's the smoke. You inhale that and then you pass out and no, it's the worst. Oh, God. Yeah, that's my number one, too. Question number two. What's your honest feelings about pumpkin spice, Chris?
It's pretty good. You know, I pumpkin spice martini, I'll do that. I don't care. I'm comfortable with my manhood.
Is your pinky up in the air, too, when you drink it? You take the sip back of the pumpkin spice martini?
Actually, first I put my monocle on and then I drink it.
I only want the highest quality vodka. Oh, what's that? You have Chopin? Yes, I'll have that in my pumpkin spice martini. Yeah, it's fine. Like, I don't mind a pumpkin spice latte, but, like, maybe two between now and mid-November.
I like the pumpkin beer, though.
Yeah, the hate on pumpkin spice has almost become a cliche at this point. Like, oh, you're so basic. Yeah, because it's delicious.
Exactly.
Question number three. A man just recently broke the Plinko record on The Price is Right.
Really?
Winning $31,500. That's a crazy amount of money for Plinko.
Jeez.
But if you could be on any game show to play any game, which one would it be?
Oh, man, that's really tough. That's a tough one. I don't know.
Even maybe one from back in the day?
Well, I was thinking, you know, I would like to go on the Match Game just to say inappropriate things.
About your wife? Or like,
no. No, but I just, you know, I kind of dig that vibe. Like, you know, fill in the blank vibe is my thing. Also, what was the show? Card Sharks. I wouldn't mind going on Card Sharks.
So I'm
going
to date myself here. Do you remember Press Your Luck? No whammy.
I do remember Press Your Luck.
That was the one
you wanted to go on?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Chris, next up, you were originally a North Shore guy.
Yeah.
It being fall, one of the staples in that neck of the woods, of course, is the Topps Field Fair.
Yeah.
Running now, ends on Monday on Columbus Day. It is Columbus Day on Monday, right?
Yes.
Did you ever go to the Topps Field Fair? And if so, are you a fan?
You know, I've never gone.
Come on!
Never been.
Growing up in Lynn, you never went up to Topps Field or the Topps Field Fair?
No, never did it.
I'm not going there, Daddy. There's too many crowds. No, and there's fried foods. I can't have it. And my Louis Vuitton slippers might get muddy, Dad. not going.
No, we never went for whatever reason. You know, people from Lynn aren't exactly always welcome in Topsfield.
I haven't been in years, but man, I love that thing, and I just I get like a thing of nostalgia for it too.
Really?
I used to go with my mom and my sisters, but yeah, I mean, you got Robinson's Racing Pigs, the giant pumpkins. They well, we live in these politically correct times, but I remember as a kid, they used to have like the old school freak shows too, like the hairy woman and Lobster Boy. Like you walk in. And it ends up being more sad than anything else, but you pay a couple of bucks, like, okay, I'll see some freaks. Like, I want to see what Lobster Boy looks like, and it's just like a thalidomide baby that's like, no, man, this is more sad than anything else. But, man, the Topsfield Fair, that's some great white trash fun. Final question, Chris. Someone's got a birthday coming up on Monday.
Yeah.
Happy birthday, pal.
Thank you.
What was your last great birthday celebration?
Last great birthday celebration. I don't know. It might have been that year my parents got me the ET cake. So we're going back quite a few years.
Oh, that's more, again, like the Topsfield Fair in the 80s, more sad than anything else.
Yeah, man, that ET cake was sweet.
Really? Like, no adult birthdays that are great?
I don't know. I'm struggling to think off the top of my head. I'm sure there was one that was, like, pretty good. I can't. Oh, actually, yeah. My 31st birthday,
okay. We
were in Puerto Rico, which was, you know, with my now wife. That was a lot of fun, actually. That was a great birthday.
What symmetry we have going here. I didn't know that was going to be your answer. My last great birthday, because my birthday is unfortunately on New Year's Eve, the worst of all the holidays. But my lady and I were in Puerto Rico, and that was a couple of years ago. Best birthday I've had.
Yeah,
years.
And it's funny because
I'm with you. I got to go back to childhood because they all stink.
Yeah, and I want to say it was on my birthday. We ate at that restaurant that I recommended to you that you guys ate at that you didn't like.
No, we didn't.
Yeah, you did.
A little bit too uppity.
Didn't like that restaurant. So I think that was my last great birthday, Jim, was that restaurant that you gave the two thumbs down to, actually.
And so wraps up this week's Gasper Murray. If you missed anything, including the Sports Hub Celtics show, all podcasts now at 98.5 The Sports Hub. And that is thanks to producer Tracy Clements, who's behind the board, thankfully, today. Because I know the show will get podcasts when Tracy's behind there. Otherwise, it's a crapshoot. It's like a scratch ticket. Hey, where's the podcast? Well, you didn't win this week. Sometimes you hit the scratch ticket and the podcast is up there. Other times, more often than not, you wasted a couple of bucks. Of course, to you, Chris, and happy birthday to you, pal. Sean Silver, Mike Sarge-Riley on the Hub headlines. Joe Murray is coming up next. It's like a Murray-to-Murray connection here on 98.5 The Sports Hub, like the old Can-Am connection. That's just for you, Sarge. You'll get that reference.
Yes, I got that.
Who was that? Marty Jannetty and...
Shawn Michaels afterwards for the Rockers.
That's what it was.
The Rockers,
yeah.
Loved the Rockers.
All right, that's going to do it for us. He still has the posters in his room, Sarge.
I loved them when they were the Midnight Rockers in AWA.
Joe Murray coming up next here, taking you into, what do we have? You're only on for like an hour and a half. What's on today? The Bruins?
Revolution 330.
Revolution, yes. Yep. Revolution and Atlanta FC coming up here later this afternoon on 98.5 The Sports Hub. Go Sox. Enjoy the rest of your weekend. Talk to you Monday with Felger and Maz. Bye.